I first met Shri Gurudev in 1982. I had come from South Africa in the middle of the night to the mat on a rickshaw from Krishnagar. And the mat was real dark and closed and everything, but Shri Govinda Maharaj saw me at the gate, let me in, and said, "You want to see Srila Guru Maharaj?" I said, "Really? It's so late, Maharaj." And of course, with ISKCON, I had joined ISKCON at a time when I didn't get a lot of personal association with Srila Prabhupada, Srila Swami Maharaj. So to get there at like 10:30 at night and then be taken up to Guru Maharaj's room while he was lying in his bed just blew my mind. Then Srila Govinda Maharaj, Srila Gurudev said, "Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, somebody has come all the way from South Africa to see you." And Srila Guru Maharaj lifted up his mosquito net in the dark room, got up, sat up, and asked me where I had come from. And I said, "South Africa." That was the first time that I had seen Guru Maharaj, but it's the first time I had met Srila Govinda Maharaj.
So you'd been to the mat previously, but you didn't meet Gurudev.
Met Gurudev because his style was always in the background. And I saw him because he was there during the darshan, but I didn't know who he was. People told me that he's a disciple of Srila Guru Maharaj and that he is the manager of the mat. You know, now that I think of it, I was never introduced until that night.
And what did you have any particular impressions about him?
The main impression I got is how much he loved Guru Maharaj and how he was attentive to every detail that Guru Maharaj, Srila Sridhar Maharaj wanted, and how smiley and friendly and just easygoing, informal his nature was, so approachable, and he would apologize about his English, and he made sure that that night that I had a room, even though there's no guest house at the time, stayed downstairs with the brahmacharis, and gave me a bed, and made sure I had prasadam, and just made me feel at home.
Can you say something about how your view of Srila Gurudev changed? He became the acharya. Over the years, how did your perspective of him change? How did you see him in a different way?
Over the years, Srila Sridhar Maharaj had me form a collecting party for the mats. Western devotees, they were from England at the time, but gradually they became Americans, and I became what Srila Sridhar Maharaj said, my personal collecting party. And so I would bring the collections at least four times a year. I didn't trust the mail. Srila Govinda Maharaj would always handle everything and bring me up to see Srila Guru Maharaj and tell Guru Maharaj that Uttamayur Prabhu has come and he's got a donation and his party is doing. Just praise me like he, as he is, you know how he is, and glorifies me, and I just feel like this is way too much. And as I would come, I could see that Srila Maharaj would touch the donation to his head and then immediately give it to Srila Govinda Maharaj. Srila Govinda Maharaj handled everything at the mat and was managing everything. And gradually you could see that Srila Govinda Maharaj is not an ordinary person. I mean, I just feel ridiculous saying that. But he was wearing white and was doing everything. He was the person in charge. And everything went through him. Of course, I had no idea except what Srila Guru Maharaj would tell us, that Govinda Maharaj, whatever he wants, it will take place. He has that mystical power that he just has to desire. I'm sorry?
You were there when he said that.
I was there when he said that several times, not just once. He would tell us that he's not an ordinary person. Through Guru Maharaj, I would hear that, yes. But, you know, no idea that in the future we'd be going around the world, how many times, world tours that I went on him, and his having disciples and being an acharya. I had no time during the 80s that this, before Guru Maharaj left, that he was who he who he is. And very personable. Always got to sit down and take prasadam with him, and, you know, always attended whatever I needed, but just didn't know how it would turn out the way it did. Inconceivable at that time. I hate to say that, because it was always there, but I didn't have the eyes to see it, except to get glimpses of it when Guru Maharaj would speak about him.
So when he was made the acharya in 1985, it didn't come as like a big surprise to you. You had some idea.
By that time, no. By that time, it was not a surprise, and it was as natural as the day is long. I mean, by 1985, Srila Govinda Maharaj and taking sannyas, and I believe on the day after Guru Maharaj's appearance day, you'd have to be practically brain dead not to see that the torch is being passed to the acharya.
Right. But I think at the same time, I've heard from others that still Gurudev didn't really come out as like a full-fledged acharya, because he was still like deferring to Srila Sridhar Maharaj so much. And,
yes,
you know, bringing everyone, yes, to see him. So in that way, nothing changed so much at that time.
In that way, but still, Srila Guru Maharaj was more and more letting us know that I'm not doing this anymore. Right. He's doing it. And and I was there when he said that if you have any faith in me, then you will follow Govinda Maharaj. And if those who cannot follow, they'll be physically dragged from the mats. And so by that time it was clear we were to follow Srila Govinda Maharaj. And then as far as initiations were concerned, it was always Srila Govinda Maharaj, always reluctant. And I can't, to tell you the truth, can't remember him having individual initiations himself, always. As far as I can remember, he was acting as Ritvik on behalf of Guru Maharaj until one day there was a conversation with a doctor from Bombay, I believe. Famous tape on that, how are we to see things now? And that conversation really made it clear that Srila Govinda Maharaj is going to initiate, not Ritvik, but initiate as guru. I'm not a great historian, so I'm just telling what I remember.
Then did you have any change in your vision after Srila Sridhar Maharaj left?
After Srila Sridhar Maharaj left, it was 1988, I believe. And Srila Govinda Maharaj's tour started, I believe, in 1992. So there was a four-year period where if you saw Srila Gurudev, you saw him at the mat, and he was doing, mainly concentrating on India and dealing with managing details in India. And yeah. I think he was writing some articles and having interviews with devotees. But the real explosion for me personally, as knowing who he is, I believe was on the first world tour. Uh-huh. We could see that this is going to be something big, bigger than we could ever imagine.
Right. You saw that when he came to California, like how successful he was. And
the first tour that he made to America, yeah, I could see this. Uh-huh. This is huge. And then he wanted me to work with Chanaran Maharaj and reopen the San Jose Temple. That was his personal instruction to me, that I want you to go to San Jose, reopen the temple, and work with Chanaran Maharaj. That was in 1991 or 92 or something. He wanted that restarted. So he that was his like first personal instruction as a guru, standing on his own. Of course, he always did everything with Srila Gurudev in mind, but I mean, that's what he told me, gave me the service for San Jose.
Then can you say something, just like briefly, about how the mission in China developed and how much that pleased Srila Gurudev?
First of all, I'd like to just give a little brief description about how Soquel came about.
Okay, yes.
Because we rented a house in San Jose on 17th Street, and then on the second trip to California, Srila Govinda Maharaj said, Prabhu, I want to see you after I take rest, I want to see you at 4 o'clock. He was living in Rishabhdev Prabhu's house at the time. I want to see you at 4 o'clock so I can beat you. And I thought, well, okay, this is going to be interesting. And then I went there and then was sitting in the room, and there's a rug, and he put his finger in the rug and made an imprint and says, here's San Jose and here's Santa Cruz. I want you to find property and buy it, not rent. You're renting in San Jose. I want you to buy property in between San Jose and Santa Cruz so the devotees have their own temple and it's bought and not rented out. There will be deities installed, and I want you to get that done. And at that time, we were barely able to pay the rent for the San Jose temple. And now he wanted us to buy property. Brought home to me clearly what Srila Sridhar Maharaj said, that whatever Srila Govinda Maharaj wants, he gets it. He has that mystical power. Because after looking at so many properties and showing Srila Govinda Maharaj different properties, we got the present Soquel property, and we were driving up the driveway to see it for the first time. And Srila Govinda Maharaj turned around and looked at me, and I was in the back seat. And he said, why do I have to get out of the car? Just buy it. And that property at that time was going for $500,000. Of course, it's worth much more now. $500,000, he wanted us to buy that. We ended up, by Gurudev Guru Maharaj's mercy, on Radhashtami, we ended up in 1993 signing the deed for the property. Now China?
Yes.
So a couple years later, not a couple years later, in 2003, I was teaching at a English as a second language school. One of the students was from China and told me about her sister, Mrs. Hao, and her husband were PhD professors in Chengdu, and that how it would be nice if people could meet, you could go there and have that experience. And I, with along with Goswami Maharaj, I approached Srila Sridhar Maharaj about the idea, and Srila Govinda Maharaj said, yeah, try it out for one semester as a teacher. Don't go as a devotee. Try it out as a teacher and see how they respond. So I'd have a teaching job, and then on Sunday I'd have a Sunday feast. And when I sent pictures of the students taking prasadam and chanting Hare Krishna and everything, Maharaj told me that you should stay there. Don't go back. Don't leave them. One semester turned into 1 year. 1 year. Now I'm going on my 12th year here in China. He just told me to try it out. He said it's a good idea. Go to China and see how it works. And he would personally call me up, or I don't know about the internet, I can't remember, but I used to talk to him on the phone and, of course, go see him. Irmala was the first Chinese devotee to come and everything, and he would specifically tell me how to deal with the Chinese people and gave me so much information, not information, but so much insight on how to treat them differently and how to do this, and just was practically managing it himself. And so much so that he would say things like, he gave me an instruction about China. He said, anybody who wants to go to visit China, first I have to say yes. I mean, Srila Govinda Maharaj. I have to say yes, and then you may say yes. Otherwise, nobody goes there. You just handle it and keep it closed and no hari hari bull and keep it real smooth. Don't go against the government. Very exclusive, very all the time. And then, of course, you came and other devotees came, and Asapriya would come every year and go to India and show him pictures and everything. He became more and more happy. He will tell me it's a miracle. And the only thing that nothing surprises him anymore in life except that they're chanting Hare Krishna in China. Things like that. He was always really happy about China.
And did he give you any final instructions about China?
Final instructions like towards the end of his presence on this earth?
Yeah, or whatever comes to mind by that phrase.
The famous thing, I don't know, maybe you've heard this story, the famous thing, one of the trips when I went to the Mat, he was on a scooter and we were going around Govindakund, and I said to him, I'm not very strict with your Chinese disciples. He had disciples at that time, and he stopped his scooter like on a dime. He just suddenly stopped and he looked up at me and he said, never say China and strict in the same sentence to me ever again. And he said that they are to be treated not in that direction, in a strict manner. And so in that way, he really instructed me to treat the Chinese in a different manner than we treat any devotees anywhere else.
I'm going to go back a little. One question I forgot to ask you is, there was one occasion when in the mot they were struggling so much, like they hardly had any money to buy boga, that Srila Sridhamaraj sent a message for you to make a special collection just so they could get by.
You mean in the Holy Dham mot?
Yes, in Navadvip, in the early years.
Yes. I don't know if it was quite as dire as you're saying, but there was a time when they were struggling, and he asked, can you immediately go and get some collection for the mots? One thing that happened soon after that is that I was with Srila Govinda Maharaj in the veranda with Srila Gurudev Guru Maharaj, and Srila Sridhar Maharaj said, would it be all right if I gave you a title? And I had never heard of such a thing before. I practically fainted. Srila Govinda Maharaj kind of held me up and everything. And then he said, can I give you a title? I said, Maharaj. So he gave me, he said, your name will be Yudhamanya Seva Vikram. Seva means service. Vikram means courageous in service. And then when we were going down the stairs, you know, that stairway, I was with Srila Govinda Maharaj. And Srila Govinda Maharaj told me, Prabhu, I advise Guru Maharaj to give you that title. So that title, really? People think that Srila Guru Maharaj gave it to me, but Srila Govinda Maharaj, Srila Gurudev, is actually the cause of that title. Can you believe that? When I was walking down the stairs, I just felt, God, Maharaj, this is coming from you? And he said, yes, Prabhu. Things like that Srila Govinda Maharaj, from behind the scenes, would do and say things to you that just inconceivable. That he'd be thinking that way and talking to Srila Guru Maharaj to give me a title, just certain things like that. There's so many stories, but that one really stands out, that actually Srila Govinda Maharaj was behind it all.
You've just shared a very special exchange you had with Srila Gurudev. Is there another exchange with Srila Gurudev that particularly stands out?
So many of them. But, you know, he used to, when I was in California, in San Jose, we were having some political strife with one party, and Maharaj was always calling me on the telephone. And one of the phone calls, he told me this really, I'll never forget it, because Ishwara Paramakrishna, Krishna is the supreme controller. So we kind of know that from the ISKCON days and everything, that Krishna is the supreme controller. But anyway, he called me up one day and he said, Prabhu, I want to tell you something. I said, what's that, Maharaj? And he says, I want to tell you that Krishna is the supreme controller. You're not the supreme controller. Krishna is. And quit acting like you can control anything. And then so many statements like that. Then one time he called up and he said, I want you to give special assistance to this particular devotee. I said, okay, I'll try to help him. And then he would say, you can't help anybody. And I was thinking, just the second before he said, try to help him. And I said, I would. Then he said, I can't help anybody. These are like stand out in my mind. So many statements that telling me that, and the guru says, it's a rope, it's a rope. And he says, it's a snake, it's a snake. And you have to have that faith. There was one time in particular, somebody was having some personal problem, kind of a higher up person. Srila Govinda Maharaj called me, and I said, how should I handle it? And he said, first of all, always handle things where nobody gets hurt. Nobody should get hurt. You should handle it in such a way that everybody comes away harmonized and nobody is burnt by it. You know, always be humble and tolerant, give honor to others, the hot principle we used to call it.
Yeah.
But there's so many different ways that he would express it in his instructions to me. That was the main thing. That was the main thing. Everybody, you got to try to make everybody happy somehow or other. You got to harmonize it. There's no other way. There's no other way. You can't have the anti-party. You have to harmonize. You have to bring it together. And at times when it would seem just completely no way that it could be harmonized, but of course with Srila Govinda Maharaj, it became harmonized. I have so many stories, but I don't want to bring up names or anything like that. There was an opposition party, and he would not come down on one side or the other. He would always say, you got to include them.
This is in SoCal. There was some division or something.
Yes. Big civil war going on. He personally would call me on the phone almost every day, sometimes from Navadvip, sometimes from Calcutta. The phone would ring and he would be on the other side. It was incredible. And then, of course, when I would go to Navadvip, always have prasadam with him, and he would talk with me for a long time. And he took me and Siddhanti Maharaj all throughout India for 4 months, around 2000 or something like that. We got to go to Jagannath Puri. We got to go to Vrindavan, and Maharaj would get on a rickshaw and have me sit next to him. And wow. And we'd walk down the streets together, and it was like the greatest 4 months of my life. You know, he had to straighten me out.
Sorry, just to go back to that, this civil war, you said you, at that time you were the temple manager in SoCal. So,
yes.
So there was this division in the temple, and you as the manager had to try and harmonize. So in that way, Srila Gurudev was like advising you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There were a lot of complaints against me and Haas and managing things, and they were all going to Govinda Maharaj, and Srila Govinda Maharaj would call me up, and I'd try to say, you know, I'm right, in a puffed up way, and he'd say, no, you're not handling it right. You gotta harmonize it. You gotta get it together, get everybody together. We gotta be under, as he used to put it, one umbrella. Such divisions were going on throughout the world, not just exclusive to SoCal, but SoCal was kind of a big temple at that time, and it still is, but I mean, it was very important to Srila Govinda Maharaj that it work out.
So just now you were talking about how Srila Gurudev took you all over India in a very affectionate way.
Very intimate, affectionate way. Very intimate. In Vrindavan, the temple wasn't there. We'd stay at guest houses, and we'd be sleeping next to him, and then be in the rickshaw with him, and then walking down the streets, and then just telling me things, you know, when he was with Guru Maharaj in Vrindavan and where they went and this place, they stood underneath a tree and Guru Maharaj said this. So many things that I wish I had recorded it and could tell you in more detail, but suffice it to say, it was very intimate and very sweet, and I can't believe that it happened to me for 4 months.
That brings me to my next question. Can you say something about Srila Gurudev as the embodiment of love and affection?
You know, one thing that he told me when he sent me to San Jose, just to go back a little bit, I was in India, and this was like in the early 90s, and he said, you've got to go back and you've got to organize Vyas Puja for Guru Maharaj. It was like 92, and he told me different things to do, and then one of the statements that he said as I was leaving, which really threw me off, it really bewildered me, he says, one thing, Prabhu, you must not give Guru Maharaj certificate. You're not in the position to give him certificate. And I thought, well, what? What am I supposed to do? You know, we're supposed to glorify him, but I'm not supposed to give him certificate. And I was so bewildered by that statement that, you know, because I'm really thick-skulled, I kind of figured out, yeah, I don't give him certificate. I can just quote other devotees and God brothers and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is having Guru Maharaj sing Rupa Manjari right before his departure. That certificate's not coming from me, but I can tell the story. But he's always making us think more deeply, shaking it up, shaking what we thought was reality and having it say, well, you better see reality through the way I see it. Don't just assume that, okay, you're going to go and do it this way. You have to do it as I see it. Always giving us that understanding. even what we thought was just perfectly clear from Srila Guru Maharaj, from Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Govinda Maharaj's guru, we would have that conception even changed through Srila Govinda Maharaj.
Wow.
What we thought that Srila Guru Maharaj said, we thought, oh, well, okay, understand that. But then through Srila Govinda Maharaj could realize that actually we didn't understand it at all. Without Srila Govinda Maharaj, I mean, it's almost a cliche to say, but without Srila Govinda Maharaj, there's no way that we could have even a slight inkling of who Srila Sridhar Maharaj is. It becomes a completely different person. Srila Guru Maharaj became a completely different person from who we thought he is. And different, I say that in an affectionate, positive way. Spiritual life is ever fresh and ever new, and we're always students, never master.
Can you say something more about that, about how you feel Srila Gurudev deepened your understanding of Krishna consciousness even after hearing from Srila Sridhar Maharaj?
Well, you know, I was managing in South Africa, got in trouble, even got arrested and beaten up on the street because I was distributing Guru Maharaj's books. Guru Maharaj was a president at the time, but later Srila Govinda Maharaj would explain some of the things that Srila Guru Maharaj would write to me through the secretary. And Srila Govinda Maharaj would say, well, you know why Guru Maharaj said that, and you know why what was behind this and what was behind that. And I had no idea. You know, like I have to go back that it was all stemming from the influence of Srila Govinda Maharaj on Srila Guru Maharaj. And I always thought that it was always the influence of Srila Guru Maharaj influencing Srila Govinda Maharaj. Of course, that's true. You know, who's the guru and who's the disciple wasn't what I thought it was. In a lot of ways, Srila, I don't know, I'm in over my head, but I always felt that Srila Govinda Maharaj was like a guru to Srila Sridhar Maharaj. I hope I'm not being offensive, but
wow.
That's, I say that not to diminish Srila Guru Maharaj's position.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he always would send somebody to Calcutta. If Srila Govinda Maharaj went to Calcutta, he couldn't live without Srila Govinda Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
And that became apparent even after Srila Guru Maharaj left this world. It became more and more apparent over the years of how much Srila Govinda Maharaj was affecting my spiritual life more than Guru or Prabhupada. I've tried to tell some stories in that regard, but there's so many conversations you'd have with me about China and also about in later years. And then the final instruction that he gave me, usually towards the end, there's always some nurse or some devotees around him attending to his needs. But I was in the room at one time. It was just Gurudev and myself, and he got up on the strap off his back, and he looked at me and he said, "Prabhu, Pratistha is going to run towards you, and you have to turn around and run away from her as fast as you can." And I looked around the room and I thought, "Well, did anybody else hear this?" And you know, because usually there's always somebody in him, a tea or some medicine or something. But right after he said that, then a couple of devotees came in and we weren't alone anymore. And that was the last thing he ever personally said to me, one-on-one. Oh, one thing about China, I mean, you can all put this all in order, but it just came to my mind. One thing that really stood out, and in 2004, early days of the China years, I was with Srila Govinda Maharaj in the veranda, and this was in Calcutta. Just the two of us, and I happened to blurt out, "Maharaj," and everybody was talking about China. He had decorations on the wall and everything like that. I said, "Maharaj, I'm a fraud. It's just a fraud. I'm a fraud." And he bolted in his chair, and he said, "Then this is real. If you think like that, this is real." Things like that, where he was always I remember one time I called him up and I was saying how much my spiritual life is in trouble, this and that. He was at the airport, the San Francisco airport. I didn't know it. And I was in China and surrounded by a whole bunch of devotees in San Francisco airport, which I didn't know at the time. And I was just telling him how, you know, hopeless I was feeling. And he said, "Oh, Prabhu, you sound just like Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami." He just like, you know, wow. Made me look, I'm a pure devotee. I'm telling him, I'm not making it. That wasn't my reason for telling him that, so he could think that I'm being humble or anything. I was like crying out, and he just like turned it around and just said, "Oh yeah, you sound like Sanatan Rupa Goswami. You sound like you're really making it," and just diffused that whole my consciousness, my purpose in talking to him, just turn it into a completely pleasant, beautiful, you know, hopeful, I'm okay type of thing. And he told me, he said, when you're in China, this is in the early days, he said, "Don't think that you're alone. Prabhupada Swami Maharaj is with you, Guru Maharaj is with you, and I want you to know from my heart and not from my lips that I am with you. So all three of us are with you. You're never alone." So just trying my best as I'm talking to you, these things start coming out. There's many more, you know, stories like that. Totally encouraging, always cheerful, always sweet, humorous, positive. The times that I got chastised by him was better than when he praised me. It was like, you know, I felt like I was in. Not to avoid saying anything, but it's just unspeakable. It's hard to verbalize it. Almost words bring it down to some other dimension. The speech limits the actual sentiment I'm trying to get across.
And can you say that through your dealings with Srila Gurudev, which teachings were most important to him?
The thing is, you know, that was one, but the heart principle of Mahaprabhu Srinadipi Sunichana. I mean, he just like brought that into every conversation, that we have to be humble, we have to be tolerant, we have to give honor to others without expectation of getting honor and really live it. I mean, he really, really, that instruction or that, his focus, if I had to sum it up, it would be the Trinadapi Sunichana. But we have to be humble and tolerant, and we have to give honor from the heart. When you first hear it, you think, well, this is pretty easy, just kind of be humble and tolerate. It's a little bit harder, and give honor to others, just, you know. But it's really fundamental. His telling us it's fundamental to chanting Hare Krishna and cooking for the deity or doing any type of service, collecting or book distribution. The absolute mentality behind that must be what we used to call the hot principle.
So you said it was like almost every conversation you had with Srila Gurudev
that was the tenor. That was the basis of the conversation. So don't even try to get out of that realm. That it was always couched in that, always couched in this principle of Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, what we're doing is more or less bogus if we're not trying for that. Really wanted us to genuinely have affection for the devotees and non-devotees. And he once told me, I don't know if I should say it or not, but I'm going to say it. He once told me that Guru Maharaj used to say, "Why do you like to stay around the lower people?" Didn't use the word the scum of society, but why do you like to hang with such people and be criticized for that? And he told me, "Prabhu, I really like people who have no feeling that they have spiritual life. I like to be with people who don't have that pretense. They have no errors about them, and that they just are really like in society more or less rejected. They just seem more real to me." He used to tell me that.
More than once he said that to me.
Yes. That's his character. His character is to like to be with people who struggle in spiritual life.